You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Baseball saved our guest's life 2 years ago. He had made the Toronto Blue Jays pitching staff with an impressive spring training. But once the season began, his velocity mysteriously dropped. He went to the doctor to get an explanation. Fortunately, other medical tests were performed, revealing a much larger concern. He had thyroid cancer. By the time he was operated on at the end of the 2015 season, he was pitching for the Detroit Tigers, having been part of the trade for David Price. Thanks to early detection, he is in remission. And then there was his relationship with Shaggy, which we'll explain a little bit later. We welcome to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball, Daniel Norris. Take us back, Daniel, and thank you for your time to 2015 and that dead arm period.
It was definitely a weird time for me. I was really excited about making the team out of spring training and had a great spring training. You know, I was throwing hard, feeling good, striking people out, and then came the season, and I thought it was just kind of like a dead arm phase where my velocity really dropped a lot. I was 94 to 97 in spring training, then during the season I was kind of like 88 to 91, 92-ish. My numbers were okay. They were not bad. I think I had like a 3.5 or something like that when I got sent down. But, you know, once I got sent down, we went and got my arm checked out and just to make sure nothing was wrong. And, you know, the arm came back clean, but I guess at the footnote of the MRI, they kind of found a growth on my thyroid. And then it seemed like a few months of testing, and we finally found out what it was. And ended up having to have surgery at the end of the year.
But you went to the doctor with nothing on your mind but your arm, and I'm presuming you felt fine.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, when we first immediately got the results back from the MRI, they're like, yeah, everything's clean. So that was kind of a relief there. I figured it was just a dead arm thing. And then, you know, even a few days after I got the initial results, they're like, oh, and by the way, there's something at the bottom of the MRI that we wanted to just kind of double check.
And you have no idea what they're going to talk to you about.
I had no idea. And then once we kind of got more into it, they explained to me what was going on, and it was pretty alarming. But still at that time, they weren't positive of what it was. So obviously I had to do more testing, and that's what we kind of dove into within the next couple months. And then ultimately it turned out to be, malignant growth and needed to get it out of there. So that's what we did.
Did you tell anybody or did you keep it to yourself? Because I've been through this and it's such a difficult decision. As a cancer survivor, it's such a difficult decision.
Yeah, I think when I first found out, I definitely kept it to myself other than me and my agent. I didn't tell my parents or anybody. Just because mainly I wanted to know exactly for sure what it was. I didn't want to like scare anybody. And then once we got the final results of the test, and that's kind of when I told my parents and stuff. And I think a lot of my teammates at that time were really curious what was going on, because I'd pitch in a game and then fly out the next day to do tests, and they're like, "Where's Norris?" You know, and I'd come back the next day, and they're like, "Where were you?" And I just have to like make up something, and so that was kind of a weird time for me. But I think after a few of those trips, they started figuring out something was going on. But that's just kind of part of it.
I can't imagine the reaction. You're a world-class athlete playing in the greatest baseball league in the world. You're invulnerable, you think, and now this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely humbling, and it kind of makes you realize, like, yeah, baseball is tough, and we take it very seriously, but it makes you appreciate just even being here. And even now, two years later, I have to kind of remind myself of that, because, you know, this year's kind of been an up-and-down year for me as far as results go, and I find myself getting really stressed out about that. But I've got to realize, like, you know, I'm just happy to be here, and it's nice to have this opportunity.
And the survival rate, though, for thyroid cancer sits between 98 to 100%, which is really good odds.
Yeah, no, and they made sure I knew that, especially, like, from the get-go, which really made me feel better about just the whole situation. I never really had that much stress about it, just because they did a really good job of of kind of assuring me that everything was going to be okay. And also, you know, just my faith in God. I knew everything would be okay in the end. So I don't know that it really affected me that much. I think it probably affected the people around me more.
But the crazy part was that the doctors said you could pitch through the 2015 season and then wait to have the operation after the season. That waiting period must have been torturous.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things. They gave me the option. They're like, you know, you can, I think at that time there was maybe a couple months left in the season. And so they were just kind of like, you know, if you want to, we can, you know, you can end the season and get it taken care of now, or you can keep pitching. And for me, I wanted nothing but to just keep pitching. I just wanted to.
Because you didn't want to attract attention to this.
Well, that as well as I just love baseball. And 2 months without baseball, you know, before the off season, just sounded miserable to me. So I wanted to keep playing. And yeah, I mean, that was ultimately what I did. I got traded shortly after, and you know, finished up with the Tigers and had a good last couple months.
And I waited to hear. I read that you waited to tell your family because your sister was pregnant at the time.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, it's hard to remember that stuff, but yeah, there was just a lot going on with that, you know, and I just didn't really want to like. It just seemed like another thing for everybody to have to think about. And, I knew that I was going to be okay, so I just didn't really want to, like,
alarm anybody
just with all that going on.
But both the Tigers and then the Jays first and then the Tigers, both clubs knew of your diagnosis.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I think anytime anybody gets traded, all that stuff is kind of shared with, you know, they got to make sure everybody's healthy. So
send the medical records.
Yeah, exactly. And so I figured with all that going on and then I got traded, like, they were pretty confident everything would be okay.
You did not tell your teammates until you revealed it in an Instagram post after the season. What kind of reactions did you get from those guys?
Yeah, I mean, some people knew, like, towards the end of the year. Once I knew exactly what it was, like, the guys close to me knew. And then after it, when I revealed that, I didn't. It was really weird. I really battled myself, like, wondering if I should share it or not. But I just knew, like, going into that surgery, like, I posted that, like, on the flight going to the surgery. And I just really wanted prayers because even though they thought for sure it'd be okay, it's like you never know at any time they're going inside your body. So I just felt, you know, the power of prayer would be good to have at that point. And it worked.
Baseball became an escape. Because I would imagine that this was on your mind all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I mean, every day you wake up, you kind of wonder what's going on in there. And going to the field and working out, it's kind of, and throwing and pitching, like, it gets your mind off of it for sure, which was nice. So I was very thankful for baseball at that time.
Daniel Norris of the Detroit Tigers with me on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. And you underwent surgery at Sloan Kettering in New York, one of the world-class medical facilities in this world.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that's another, I mean, we'll call it a perk of being a baseball player. They always, you know, they want to give you the best treatment and best everything as possible. So that was fortunate to have, you know, the best hands on me for sure.
What was the recovery like? What did the doctors tell you? First, of course, they said we got it all. It didn't spread.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the best answer, or, you know, the best result there. But the recovery kind of was miserable just because I couldn't really straighten my head up because of the stitches in my neck. And when they went in there, they had to move the nerves around. So I kind of was talking like in a really high pitch voice for a while. So that was kind of weird. But yeah, it was, you know, I think it was just, it's hard to remember. I would say a couple of weeks of just kind of sitting there. They're like, yeah, we don't want you to sweat or work out for at least a month. And I think I made.
Oh man, that's like an eternity, you know, a month.
You know, and I think I made it like a week and a half before I started working out. I just covered it up really good.
Aside from the blood work and the annual checkups, anything else that had to perhaps alter your lifestyle at all?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I definitely, you know, we're locked into, like, the blood work and the annual checkups. That's something just to kind of make sure everything's right on cue. But other than that, you know, I don't really think about it much. Unless I, you know, looking in the mirror and see the scar, that's kind of about it.
Did the experience change you, change your perspective of life?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to say just because I think it definitely did at that point. But, again, it's kind of 2 years down the road, and here I am, you know, still in the big leagues and fighting my way, pitching-wise. And, I mean, I'm human, so I think sometimes I lose sight of that perspective, and something I've got to dive back into and reappreciate where I'm at, because if I have a bad game, I take it harder than anybody, and sometimes I need to really think about, you know what, I should just be happy I'm able to pitch right now because of what happened 2 years ago. And yeah, I mean, definitely, I definitely appreciate it, but I don't know that it changed my life in a way that I'll, you know, like I said, I'm still really hard on myself, so that's kind of something I'm having to deal with.
But 2015 ended on a happy note. Yeah. You were named the Grand Marshal of the annual holiday parade back home in Johnson City, Tennessee, and you rode on a float that was built by your dad.
Yeah, my dad's a handyman. He can build anything. He's really good. He owned a bike shop for 35 years, so he's always building bikes, and then he always works with wood, and he's building a lot of stuff always. But yeah, that was special. It was kind of a good cap to that year, just, you know, kind of being able to go through that parade. And my dad made an awesome float, and on the float we had a couple of, like my little league team, and then my junior peewee football team, like the kids that are there now, they were on the float with me.
You had them jump on the float.
Yeah, so it was just kind of like a nice, that's just kind of where it all started for me as far as athletics and stuff, and I just wanted to show my appreciation to the city and everything.
You're the hometown hero. Before we go, we got to talk about Shaggy. That's your 1978 Volkswagen van that you travel in. What color is Shaggy, and how did Shaggy get its name?
Yeah, Shaggy.
Is Shaggy a boy or a girl?
I don't know, really. I just named it Shaggy. I named it Shaggy just because I like Scooby-Doo when I was growing up.
Of course.
And the color's kind of like a creamy yellow, I would say. Yeah, it's a nice color.
How long have you had it?
I got it in 2011. Wow. Yeah, so quite a while, and she's still running pretty good. I've had to do a lot of work on her, but she's hanging in there.
And you went to from Johnson City to spring training in Lakeland using the back roads. You're a back roads kind of guy.
Yeah, I enjoy that. I think especially, you know, once you get in where I'm from, you know, we're up in the mountains, and the back roads there are really beautiful, and I like kind of being able to take it slow and get down those roads and through the mountains, and then you get into, like, South Carolina, North Georgia. It's really beautiful there, and then even in Florida, you know, the back roads there, it's kind of swampy, and it's cool to kind of hang out there.
Mm-hmm. And you lived out of the van in spring training, which brought a lot of attention that you didn't need to have.
Yeah, that was something that I wasn't really expecting. The whole van thing was something I always dreamed of, just being able to kind of live self-sustainably and be not need much. That's kind of how I was raised, and it was something I just always did, and I did it for a few years before people even caught wind of it. And so when they started hearing about it and wanting to do stories, I turned a lot of the stories down just because I didn't want that attention. And so once I, you know, I kind of got talked into doing a couple interviews there, and they're very reluctant interviews, but they ended up being, you know, okay, like nice people, you know, but it was just a lot of like influx of attention that I just wasn't really okay with. It just kind of made it seem a little forced there, and yeah, but it was okay. I mean, I understood it. It was just something I just did because I enjoyed it. I didn't really want that attention, obviously, because, you know, if you're camping out and somebody recognizes the car, it'll come up and kind of say what's up. So it's not really like something I wanted. But yeah, it was all right. You know, it was just kind of part of it, I guess.
You have something in common with your manager that I read about in preparation for this interview. He's a surfer.
Yeah.
You're a surfer. You surfed in Nicaragua. Daniel, we think of surfers coming from California, Hawaii.
Yeah.
We don't usually associate guys from Northeast Tennessee being surfers.
Yeah, that was something that I kind of always had the interest growing up. I would say 8th grade on, I always was like, man, I wish I could surf. I want to learn how to surf just because my favorite musician is Jack Johnson. And at that time in my early life, like, he was the first album I ever bought. He was the first music I intently listened to. So naturally, I wanted to know everything about him and what made him tick, you know, and I watched all his interviews. And just that lifestyle really appealed to me. And I think that had a lot to do with me wanting, like, to live out of my van and just kind of be simple, you know. And So once I told myself once I had the opportunity to kind of have like an off season time where I could have be alone and be myself, I was like, I'm going to learn how to surf. And so I started traveling around to places I could do that. And, you know, it was, you know, it took some time, but once I started to learn how to do it, you know, you fall in love with it, and it's a great passion to have, and it takes you to cool places for sure.
Your Instagram bio says, quote, in search of three things. Number one, eternal life. Number two, the strike zone. Number three, good waves.
Yeah.
Pretty much says it all.
That pretty much says it all. I mean, eternal life for me is just, you know, finding eternal life in God and being up there with Him. And that's my job. That's my goal every day, is to live life for Him and do it the right way. And then a strike zone, yeah, it's my job description, but it's also just, it's what I love to do, and it's my passion, and going out there and being successful on the mound and glorifying God, throwing strikes. But then good waves, you know, it's just kind of another passion of mine, like we just talked about. It's just going out there and the search, you know, it's great to have good waves and find them and surf and ride it, but also like the journey to those is really enticing, just being able to go out there and, you know, drive the van around, not really in a hurry, taking the back roads like we talked about, and it's just the journey to finding those good waves is always pretty peaceful, and it's a good time to kind of reflect on what's going on in your life. Yeah.
You and me, we love doctors.
Yeah, we do.
In remission, those are my two favorite words in the English language. I'm going to think for you, which is very dangerous, that they're your favorite words too.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate.
It's been quite a journey, and it will continue.
Yeah, it will.
So that'll do it for Daniel Norris and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.